Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlo. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
I had the most lovely experience the other day. I was sitting at my desk in the treatment room slash my art room slash my Zumba room slash my yoga room.
She does have a pretty big house, just so everyone knows. Like, it's just a multi-purpose room.
I just have a really favorite room because it's got a fireplace and all these big, beautiful windows from floor to ceiling looking out on nature. So anyway, sitting at my desk, I'm doing work for Patreon, for all our patrons and all the content. And I'm fully absorbed in doing some research. The guides have told me what to research, what they want prepared. So I'm doing some work. I'm so happy. And I look up and it's like there's the shadow of a dead man sitting in the chair right by the window. And I look over and he's just looking around the room. And I think, oh, okay. I wonder who this is or who they're for or whatever, but I'm really engrossed in what I'm doing. So my head just comes right back down. I go right back to my work again. Maybe, you know, another 10 minutes goes by. I look back up again. He's sitting there. His energy is so damn good. And he's just calm, an elderly man. He's just sitting and he looks over and he just sort of nods at me and that's it. And I'm like, oh, okay, noted. You're still there. Continue doing my research. Well, this went on for some time because I had hours of research to do and he just sat. And then finally, as I'm doing more research and I was not near done, I look over and he's just still sitting there and he's just looking at me. He's so patient, Kelly. And I thought, oh, he's waiting to talk to me and I'm being rude. So I stopped doing my research. I stood up. I went over and sat across from him and sat in one of the other single chairs because there are three in that room. And I said to him, hey, I've noticed you've been sitting here patiently for some time. And he says to me, yes, that's fine. I'm not in any rush. And I said, well, are you here to talk to me? And he says, oh, yes, that's why I found your house. And I said, oh, I can sit here and listen to you. And he goes, are you done the research? And I said, no, I'm not. I said, I'm going to take a pause. I'm going to sit and visit with you for a while. And he goes, okay. He says, you're going to be meeting my family. And he says, I know you're a medium. The spirit world has told me. And he says, they told me that I could come down here and chat with you and give information and that you don't need it just during a session. That sometimes you'll take it the day before. You'll even take it in dreams. And he says, and I had a variety of ways that I could approach you to give you the information. And he says, so I took a look at your room here and all your art and all the stuff that you've got in this beautiful room, all the things that you love. And he says, and I thought, yeah, I think I want to go down and be in her room, in her house with her and sit and actually have a visit with her, as opposed to showing up in a dream or just showing up during the session. He says, I decided I wanted to like have your company. And so I sat there and I said to him, well, that's lovely. I said, so I'm going to listen. And he says, oh, I know what you're going to do. He says, I've been asking the spirit world how you do this. And he says, so I know that I get to show you things and I get to what you call download and give you files. And he says, and I know that some of the stuff you're going to remember, some of it you're not. But as you get into the session, what I say to you now will be retrieved in another kind of file called your memory, which is a different file than the ones you're given during a session. And I said, that's interesting. I said, go on. And I said, I'm going to listen to you. And he says, well, you're going to meet my family. He says, it's a group session. And he goes, and they're not all in the same location. You're going to have different cameras on. And he says, they're all organizing this so that they get to talk to me. And he says, I'm quite excited to be able to speak to all of them. He says, you're only going to have the adults. They've decided no children. And he says, yes, you're going to have a group of adults and they're going to be my children and their partners. And he said, for the most part, but guaranteed all adults. And he says, so I want to talk to you about my life. I want to tell you about my personality. He says, because these are going to be core things that they're looking for. They're not really interested in hearing that I had gray eyes and I was going to say in blue hair. I don't know where that just came from. White hair. And he says, they're just going to assume that if I'm an old man, that I have white hair. And I said, okay, that's fair. And I don't want that. I don't want white hair. I want the natural color you had when you were young. So instantly he changes his hair color and shows me that his hair was dark brown. Okay, so that kind of information is great. And I file that in my memory. And he says, but I understand that you enjoy talking about personality. You like talking about who we were and how we lived our lives. And he said, so what I'm trying to do is give you my energy, because I also understand that you actually pick up my energy of who I am. And I said, yes. I said, that's true. And he said, so just sit with me for a while. Oh, Kelly, the whole room filled with peace. And he showed me in his life how right from a very young age, he was his temperament was very even. Like he really liked logic. He really liked and learned that you had to have patience and that you were going to be disappointed. He took for granted that there were going to be disappointments in life and prepared himself for the fact that, yes, I am. So I get to choose how I'm going to respond to it. I feel like I said a wrong word there.
Absolutely.
What did I just say?
He took for granted.
Yeah. Okay, that's not what I meant.
He understood.
He understood.
And accepted.
Yeah. Thank you. Didn't feel right when it came out of my...
Also, did he have blue eyes?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Oh, maybe that's why you're thinking, because I said...
Gray eyes.
Gray eyes, but blue hair? Oh.
Not retrieving her files well today, folks.
I couldn't go with yes. And then I got the reverse.
Okay.
Oh, my God in heaven. Okay, thank you. So... I appreciate your showing up to the job today. Mm-hmm. I had to keep me on my toes. So he's showing and describing and giving me all of the energy of this type of person who really consciously chooses that I'm going to choose what my moods are. I'm going to choose my response. I'm not just going to react. And if I just react, I'm going to work on how I just react. By looking at what I believe about things so that my natural reactions are in alignment with how I actually want to live my life. So he talks about like how he really does this very consciously with really beautiful intention and integrity, and how as he goes through life, he values living with integrity more and more. And it's not that he shoves down feelings. He says, I had to learn to feel my feelings.
Well, that's the opposite of integrity.
Pardon?
You can't live with integrity and shove down feelings.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's assumed that you're feeling your feelings if you have integrity.
Yes. So he says, like, I had to learn how to feel my feelings and that I could verbalize them. I had to even figure out how to, like, get the energy out if I was really angry about something. And he says, but then I learned that you don't really have to get the energy out if you use logic, if you use intuition, if you use reasoning, if you ask questions.
That's called channeling it appropriately.
Yeah. And he said, so, like, I really wanted to live my life that way because I saw the benefits of doing it, not just for other people, but my relationships with them. And then he says, what really hit me was that I just really enjoyed being me. I just enjoyed being in my own skin and my own experience of being in a human body, just being human. And he said, so he says, by the time I age, like I get older, he said, I'm quite good at this. And he said, and one of the things that I do is I whenever I notice that I'm getting a little anxious, he says, I take and I hold my hands like this. I fold my hands together, I link them. And he says, and I just kind of rub my thumb slowly like that. And he said, you know, he says, I know you're going to tell me that like that could be like a polyvagal theory exercise. He says, but I didn't know that. And he said, what I did was I just rubbed my fingers together. And that was my way of reminding myself, breathe. that was my way of reminding myself, you have choices here, no matter how bad this looks, you have a choice. And the choice might be the way that you think about it, the way that you feel about it, the questions that you ask, whether you stay, whether you walk away. And he said, and I learned by just rubbing my thumbs together that I was allowed to slow down and take my time, and that other people or situations might be at different speeds, but that somehow I tried as best I could to recognize and to acknowledge and to be in that space of, but I have to have some control too. And not necessarily over the event or the outcome, but over the way that I feel about those things. And he goes, so my family is going to be freaked out and happy if you take your hands and you do this in front of them, and then you slowly tip your hand and rub your thumbs together. And they're going to be like, oh my God, she's got them. Because they all know that this is something I do, not just on the daily, but sometimes on an hourly basis, depending on what's going on. Now, if things are calm, he says, you know, like as I retired, there wasn't as much to stimulate different types of emotions. And he says, because you're just not interacting with the world and other people as much. And he said, so my hands didn't come together as often. And then he says, so you can say that. And then you can also say that when my wife became ill and we realized, oh, this is end of life, and that I'm caring for my wife until she dies, I went back to holding my hands and rubbing my thumbs while I cared for her and while she passed away, and I grieved. And I tried to figure out while she was alive how to grieve her coming death. And they saw me go back to the hands again. And he said, and then eventually when I died, he said, you can talk about the fact that my hands weren't together, my arms were by my side, and that my daughter and my son on either side of the bed picked up each of my arms, crossed my hands, took my fingers, shoved them together to link them, and put my thumbs together and made me, like each of my kids made me rub my thumbs so that as I was crossing over, that I was calm. And that I was in my body as I was leaving my body.
Cool.
And he said, I would like you to explain all of that to them. And he says, and I think it would be very sweet of you, Karen, if you would also tell them about this part of this, how you got this, and the fact that I showed up for a visit, and that I waited patiently in a chair by the window in your home while you were working. And then I just waited for you to notice me. I didn't grab your attention. I wasn't seeking your attention or demanding it. And he said, because that was very much my personality when they came to visit, that I often just sat in the chair by the window and I waited for them to come in the door. I let them have their commotion at the door with the kids, put their stuff away. And they would come into the room where I was and say, hey, Dad. And that I invited them into the house and into my energy. I let them like move towards it. And he said, it is something that each of my children miss since I've passed. And he says, so I'd like you to tell them that I did it again to you. He says, they're going to love all of that. So I did. During the session, I did tell his whole family these things exactly the way that I'm telling you and everybody listening to the story. And their reactions were just absolutely lovely. But I'm going to stick more to telling you about sitting with him in that room. And then he says to me, I wore a necklace. He said, later in life, he said, and I took this medallion, and he said, I put one of them on one side of me. And he said, and then I had another necklace and I hung it the other way.
Oh, interesting. Like on his back.
Yeah. And he said, and I had the other medallion, like I'll say almost like through them so that they hit like in the same spot. And he said, one medallion on the one side. I can't remember exactly how he worded it now, Kelly, but I'm going to do my best. They were both eyes. And he explained it to me after, like, I said, what are the eyes about? I said, they're slightly different. And he goes, yeah. He goes, one of the eyes is like protection. And he says, so it's like, and that was the one on his back. Like, somebody's got my back. Somebody's seeing what's going on behind me, so to speak. And he said, and then the one on the front was like an open eye that was like openness, like an open heart, like open-mindedness, wanting to see things. Yeah. And he said, I took to wearing these two things, these two pendulums. No, pardon me, Kelly.
Pendants.
Because of what they meant to me. And he said, my children have kept them. And he said, and I know they've kept them. He said, they did not bury me. They did not leave them at a funeral home or anything like that. They asked for them back. And he says, and I was cremated. He says, you can also offer that. And he says, but they've kept them and they each keep them for a period of time. And he said, now they haven't moved through even a full cycle of all of our children yet. He says, because I haven't been passed that long. And he said, but the intention was that somebody could keep it for a period of time. And the idea was to trust each other, that one of them might keep it for a week and the next one might keep it for 3 months and another one might keep it for a year. And so long as you were checking in and saying to the next person who was going to get it after you, hey, do you mind? I've had it for a month. I'd like it a little longer. As long as the next person says, yeah, okay, yeah, you go ahead and do that, that each person gets to keep it as long as they want. But it will perpetually move through all of the children until there's one left living. Mm-hmm. And then they will move that on, if they want to grandchildren. So he said, I really like what they're doing, because it is my children really valuing each other and what they need as they're grieving. And he said, so please make sure that you tell them that I know what they're doing with those. I did that as well. They were so happy to know that he knew exactly how they were handling it. Mm-hmm. And that it wasn't like 2 weeks here, 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there, that it was all from a space of, I'm checking in and we're talking, we're communicating, we care, we love each other, we're connecting to each other. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm thrilled how they've managed to figure all of this out. And then he says, now I just briefly want to say that I went into a nursing home after my mom, I'm having a rough go today, after my wife passed away and their mother passed away. He said, and I willingly went, even though I had full cognition. And he said, and I willingly went, even though I had full mobility. And he said that I could cook for myself. He said I was very with it. And he said, but they found me a beautiful nursing home that had like assisted living, a building right beside it. And he said, so I went into the assisted living first because I was very independent. And he said, and I had my car, I had my driver's license, I was just doing great. It was like having an apartment, but being with all people my own age and also having social structures there, which was great for me after I lost my wife, because we were a couple that really met our own needs. And other than our children, we weren't socializing at all. We no longer had a single friend in our world. We were each other's everything, and our children and our grandchildren met all of our needs. And he said, so I realized when I lost my wife, that was not the smartest thing I did. He said, I realized then that the isolation that I did with my wife and the needs that I put on my children and grandchildren, instead of reaching out to community and friends and neighbors, was not good. And he said, as a result of it, a good option was the assisted living. And he said, that was absolutely fabulous for me. And he said, so I learned through, you know, moving in there and getting through that, that my children made a really good decision for me. And pretty much insisted on me doing it. And I moved into that decision with acceptance. I didn't fight them, even though I struggled with it internally. He said, I felt it was my responsibility to deal with my inner turmoil over that decision and not bring it to the children. I thought that was really important to say in this podcast. And he said, so I figured that out and it took me time. He says, but that was my responsibility. And he said, and then I liked to help the cleaning staff because I was able. I liked to help them care for the other people when I could do something that wasn't interfering in legal ways. He said, so I had to kind of figure out in the nursing home what I could do and what I couldn't do. And in the assisted living part, because the rules were different. He said, so I went back and forth and they kind of called me one of the employees. Mm-hmm. And he said, because I would walk in and I would make coffee for everybody. He said, and I would do the dishes. I would do a lot of the tasks that the staff really did not want to do or have time to do or were overworked doing, but I could kind of get away with, like sweeping. He says, or kind of like taking the shovel out and clearing some of the snow off of some of the little patios. He says, so I did stuff like that. He says, so you can tell them stuff like that too, because they know I did it. And he goes, and the last message he says that I want to give them, he says, is that when I was dying myself, he said, my children were there. He says, and it was over a period of time. I didn't have a heart attack and drop. He said, I'd had a stroke in it. And then he said a series of strokes over a couple of months. He says, and then I had a massive stroke and died. And he said, during that period of time, he said, I went in and out of levels of consciousness. And then he said, I want to validate some things for my children around my death experience. And he said, so in that period of time, he says, I went in and out of states of consciousness. And I want to validate that I actually spoke in my parents' original language. He said, my parents were from Poland and they immigrated into America before I was born. So he said, I never ended up speaking Polish and I have never understood my parents. He said, I was raised, as were all my brothers, he said, in a very English home. And my parents did that on purpose so that they could learn English as well. So they refused to speak their language, their Polish, once they arrived. They were determined, we have to learn English. And he said, so I didn't know it. And he says, so they were quite shocked. He said, when here I am laying on the bed and I'm dying and I'm in another state of consciousness and I'm mumbling in the language of my parents. Mm-hmm. He said, because they knew I didn't know it. And he said, I did things like that pretty consistently, he said. And then he said, I would speak sometimes in these other states of consciousness where they thought I was sound asleep. And all of a sudden I'd go into a full conversation with somebody about something that happened back in Poland. And he said they did things like they wrote notes. Then eventually one of them went, well, why bother writing the notes? Let's take a video and send it to our aunts in Poland and ask them what the heck he's saying. Cool. So they took a little video. They'd send it off to a relative in Poland and go, what is dad saying? And the family in Poland would go, oh my God, we had to ask so-and-so. This is what he's saying. And we had to have it verified by great aunt so-and-so that dad is correct about this. Your father is right. This happened in the war. This happened. And he wasn't overseas when that occurred. Mm. So
he was channeling.
Yeah. So he wanted to confirm that he did this. He wanted to confirm what they did with the information. He wanted to say to them that that experience right there in that time frame before he passed rewired the way they think. The openness that they have towards things that they would not consider religious, but that they would now call spiritual. And some people might argue with that, depending on what your personal definition of religious versus spiritual is. I'm just saying that's what he said. And he said that he was so grateful for that whole experience because all of his children have gone forward now since he's passed and are looking at mediums, psychic abilities, intuition, as strongly as they value logic, reasoning, processes, science, medicine, like all of these things. He says there, what it did was it gave them the ability to be more open-minded. And it gave them the ability to value things equally instead of putting too much value in one area and giving something else nothing or very little and then stacking evidence against it that was unreasonable. And he said, so he says there was great purpose in the way that I died and they need to hear that, because some of them struggled with the way that I died, and they didn't think that the idea of that's how you die in America was okay. And he said, so I'm trying to say to them, it was, and give them that relief. And then I said, you know, I said, I'm so happy to be able to give your family all of these messages for you. And I said, now, I don't know how much of this I'm going to remember accurately, so you do have to show up, right? And he said to me, yes. He says, and by the way, I really like what you've done with this room and the energy that you have here. So it will be a pleasure to come back when my family shows up. And he did.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And I thought this was the best way to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. And your visit.
Yes. And Kelly, I got to tell you something. Right before we started to record this today, I actually had not prepared to tell the story this way. I had it all written down on the computer from the perspective of the family that came for the session. And to talk to you today in that kind of a format. Mm-hmm. And right before I came up the stairs to do this, he said to me, hey, could you change your format and talk about our conversation if I help you through it in real time as you're talking to Kelly? Mm-hmm. And I thought, I can give that my best shot.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So still channeling this.
Yeah.
That's lovely. I appreciate the story from both of you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, please be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform and leave a review. New shows will air every other Saturday.